How's it going, aviators? Welcome to the Aviator's Guide. I'm Holly Blino, your friendly social media CFI and your host. Thank you so much for joining me today on this premiere episode, the very first of my ground episodes that I will be doing. For those of you out there who do celebrate Christmas, I hope it was a wonderful one full of love and food. Who out there may or may not have gained 5 pounds? Hopefully it wasn't just me. Well, I would like to take just a moment to let all of you know that I will now be recording every other Friday instead of every Friday. Reason being, these episodes require a lot of research and you guys deserve the best possible content and information that I can give you. And I always wanted to do the best I can when it comes to breaking down these sometimes, usually, almost always ambiguous federal aviation regulations. And by breaking down, I mean interpreting them to the best of my ability. So thank you all for your support and your understanding. It's very much appreciated. Now let's get into our first ground lesson. First off, it's really good for you newer pilots out there to know that not all CFIs have to actually teach ground frequently. But at the flight school where I instructed for almost 2 years, the CFIs are responsible for every bit of knowledge our students had to learn for their check ride. I've actually lost track of how many ground lessons I've done for students, but I can tell you, I've taught hundreds of hours of ground. And I even made lesson plans for every single topic that needed to be covered. Making lesson plans is something I recommend to every new instructor, as it helps you have a good flow and to make sure that you hit all of the necessary information. Making these lesson plans also helps instructors avoid giving students misinformation. For my CFIs out there, or soon-to-be CFIs, remember, the law of primacy is real. For those of you who don't know or don't remember, the law of primacy is really just whatever you learn first usually sticks. So as an instructor, when you're unsure of a topic or a fact when talking to your student, don't just guess. Instead, whenever you are unsure of the question, be honest with them and then look it up together. Or you can always use my personal favorite phrase, "Now where would you find that?" This way helps your students properly learn how to use their resources for when it comes to their check ride, which is super helpful because you're not going to be in that check ride with them. Either way, being honest with your students is always the way to go. All right, well, let's get into the nitty-gritty of one of my personal favorite things to do as a pilot and what this ground lesson is all about, night flying. This lesson is particularly important to you private pilot students out there, as this is a required topic to cover since it's listed in the ACS, or Airman Certification Standards. Even for you pilots out there studying for your commercial check ride, this would also be good to review. I even made a crossword puzzle for you guys to help you study the terms I'm about to go over, so check it out. The link is in the show notes. Do you guys know how many types of night there are in aviation? If you have no idea what I'm talking about, don't worry, that's why you're here. The 3 types of night are sunset to sunrise, 1 hour after sunset to 1 hour before sunrise, and the most complicated one, the end of evening civil twilight to the beginning of morning civil twilight. Let's start with the simplest of definitions, sunset to sunrise. This definition of night is for the purpose of your VFR equipment required for night flying, which can be found in 91.205. This regulation states that in order for you to fly at night, you have to have all of the required daytime VFR equipment, which many aviators know as a tomato flames, but you must also have all of the required nighttime VFR equipment, which many pilots use the acronym FLAPS to remember this one. The required nighttime items that you will need as per this regulation are position lights, anti-collision lights, a landing light if you're for hire, a source of electrical energy, and spare fuses. But many aircraft these days are using circuit breakers instead of fuses. But really, the only one of these that sunset to sunrise apply to is the position lights. But Holly, where does it specify the rule for needing these position lights? Well, I'm glad you asked, because according to 91.209, you have to have them from sunrise to sunset. And there you go. Another type of night is from 1 hour after sunset to 1 hour before sunrise. And this one comes into play in regards to your currency when carrying passengers at night. 61.57 Bravo 1 states, quote, "Except as provided in paragraph E of this section, no person may act as pilot in command of an aircraft carrying persons during the period beginning 1 hour after sunset and ending 1 hour before sunrise unless within the preceding 90 days that person has made at least 3 takeoffs and 3 landings to a full stop during the period beginning 1 hour after sunset and ending 1 hour before sunrise, and that person acted as sole manipulator of the flight controls, and the required takeoffs and landings were performed in an aircraft of the same category, class, and type, if a type rating is required." End quote. Easy enough, right? So does this mean you can only log night landings during that period from 1 hour after sunset to 1 hour before sunrise? Not necessarily. And we'll get to that in just a bit after I cover the third and last type of night, which is based on the actual definition of night as per FAR 1.1. And it states, quote, night means the time between the end of evening civil twilight and the beginning of morning civil twilight, as published in the Air Almanac converted to local time, end quote. What? Air Almanac? Civil twilight? I know, guys. I'm sorry. You're already drinking from a fire hose, learning how to do turns around a point, VOR cross checks, and how the engine goes suck, squeeze, bang, blow. But let's go ahead and rip the band-aid off and go over this. According to the Air Almanac listed in 1.1, civil twilight is when the sun is 6 degrees below the horizon. And of course, I put the link to that over 900-page Air Almanac in the show notes if you're interested in a bit of light reading. To help us be even further descriptive in explaining civil twilight, the Airplane Flying Handbook lets us very kindly know that, quote, the National Weather Service defines evening civil twilight as the time that begins in the morning or ends in the evening, when the geometric center of the sun is 6 degrees below the horizon. Therefore, morning civil twilight begins when the geometric center of the sun is 6 degrees below the horizon and ends at sunrise. Evening civil twilight begins at sunset and ends when the geometric center of the sun is 6 degrees below the horizon, end quote. And this window of civil twilight generally lasts for about 30 minutes, depending on the time of year. There's a link included in the section of the Airplane Flying Handbook that is supposed to take you to an FAA-approved calculator for sunrise, sunset, and civil twilight. But I haven't ever been able to get that link to actually work. So I included a link in the show notes to a non-government website that seems to calculate civil twilight rather well. At least it works from what I can tell. My personal ability to be able to tell when the sun's geometric center is 6 degrees below the horizon is a little bit lacking. Are y'all still with me? Did you forget what we were talking about yet? Well, at the end of the day, civil twilight is used to tell you at what time you can begin logging your night flights. So let's use a real example. If the sun sets at 1727 Central and evening civil twilight ends at 1752 Central, and you flew from 1700 Central to 1900 Central, then you can technically only log that time from 1752 to 1900, giving you 1 hour and 8 minutes, or about a 1.1 of night flight time and 2 hours of total time. And if you want to go to the airlines or get your ATP certificate in general, you have to have 100 hours of night flight time. So make sure to record all that you get. If you're struggling to get that 100 hours of night flight time, you should check out the Aviator's Guide episode 15 on how to fill out your pilot logbook at about 13 minutes and 38 seconds to learn a handy and super cool trick to gain nighttime quickly. That is depending on if you already have more than 20 night landings to a full stop. Okay, now that you understand civil twilight and how to use it, let's revisit those night landings I talked about earlier that have to be done 1 hour after sunset to 1 hour before sunrise. Remember that FAR 1.1 defines night as that time from the end of evening civil twilight to the beginning of morning civil twilight? So technically, you can log night landings as soon as evening civil twilight has ended, since at that point it's technically nighttime. Let's use the same example as earlier. The sun sets at 1727. Evening civil twilight ends at 1752. 1 hour after sunset is 1827. So you can log nighttime after 1752, and you can also log night landings after 1752. However, those night landings logged after 1752 and before 1827 cannot count towards your takeoffs and landings to carry passengers at night. Now you may be wondering, what's the point of logging any night landings that are before that 1 hour after sunset and after the 1 hour before sunrise? You guys just have the best questions. Oh my gosh. Well, the reason you may want to log those landings in that extra 30-ish minutes after evening civil twilight has ended and before morning civil twilight has begun is what I just talked about in my last episode going over night landings. Man, I've referenced that twice now. I guess in the spirit of the holidays, I'll be nice and briefly go over it again for you guys. Basically, 61.159 Bravo states that if you have done at least 20 takeoffs and landings at night to a full stop, then every additional night takeoff and landing to a full stop can be exchanged for 1 hour of night flight time to count towards that required 100 hours of night flight time for your ATP certificate, as long as this method is not used for more than 25 hours. Notice how it doesn't say the landings have to be done 1 hour after sunset to 1 hour before sunrise. It only says night. And by now, we all know what the definition of night is, right? As per 1.1. So 61.159 Bravo is the only reason why it might be beneficial for you to log full stop night takeoff and landings that are in those times between the end of evening civil twilight and 1 hour after sunset, and between 1 hour before sunrise and the beginning of morning civil twilight. I know this may sound a lot and overwhelming and kind of confusing, and if you're listening to my podcast, go check out my YouTube video on this episode and it will have it more laid out for you in an easier way to understand. Picture is always helpful, right guys? I prefer learning visually myself. Okay, wow. Have all we gone over right now is the three types of night? Okay, well, let's get started with the fun stuff now, guys. Starting with night vision and our miraculous eyes. Our eyes are complex and beautiful creations. Two features that you need to know about as a pilot are really cool nerves called cones and rods. These are multitudinous, light-sensitive nerves that are located at the back of the eye on the retina. The retina is a layer upon which all images taken through the eye are focused, so it's kind of important. The retina then transmits those images to the brain directly via the optic nerve. The cones that I mentioned earlier are located in the center of the retina and also make up the fovea, which is a small dip in the retina. And the rods that I mentioned you need to know about are concentrated in a ring around the cones, especially in the periphery of the retina. Cones are pretty cool, and they can detect details and faraway objects and colors like red, blue, and green. And they also enable you to be able to see an object when looking directly at it, as they're in the center behind the pupils. But rods are the stars when it comes to night vision, as they are what make it possible. And there are about 20 times more rods than there are cones per eye. And these rods contain rhodopsin, which is a protein that is particularly sensitive to the light. Rods are actually significantly more sensitive to light than the cones are. Rods are also our MVPs when it comes to detecting moving objects. But they provide no color like cones do, only shades of gray. The process of our night vision coming into play is called dark adaptation. And as helpful and necessary as rods are for this entire process, they do have some downfalls, blind spots, and a slow recovery time. Every eye has a blind spot at the optic disc, which is where the optic nerve connects to the retina. And this is because there are no cones or rods in that area. If you want to see this in action, you can go to the PHAC, Pilot's Handbook of Aeronautical Knowledge, page 17-21. If you do it just right, it's kind of trippy. Besides at that optic disc, there's another blind spot that comes into play, at night. Remember how the fovea, that little dip in the retina, consists entirely of cones? So go ahead and take a guess where the other blind spot is at night. Yeah, directly in the center of your vision where the fovea is. Meaning if you stare directly at something at night, it will be very hard, if not impossible, to detect. This blind spot on your fovea actually increases as the object is farther away. So be aware of that. And where are those rods primarily located? In the periphery of the retina, right? So how do you think we need to look at these objects at night in order to see them, regardless of the blind spot? We have to allow the rods in the periphery of our eye to see the image by looking 5 to 10 degrees off center, which will make the object more clear and brighter. This is why slow off-center scanning is crucial when you're flying at night. The slow recovery time of rods is also a hindrance at night. While cones only take about 5 to 10 minutes to adjust to darkness, it takes rods 30 minutes to adjust. But remember, the rods are 1,000 times more sensitive to light than the cones are. Crazy, right? And if you have been out in the sun all day before you go night flying, it can actually make dark adaptation that much more difficult for your eyes. But if you're using dim red flight deck lighting at night, you may be able to adjust those rods in your eyes in 20 minutes instead of 30. Just as off-center viewing is important at night, so is taking care of your dark adaptation to prevent temporary blindness. Temporary blindness sure sounds disconcerting, and it can actually happen easier than you think. While it takes 30 minutes for a dark adaptation to happen in your eyes, it can be lost in a second from a bright light. Did you know that one theory as to why pirates wore eye patches was for them to prevent losing their dark adaptation in one of their eyes? Maybe we should all start bringing back the eye patch. Protecting your eyes from temporary blindness is necessary to avoid experiencing more illusions than you already do at night. Yes, illusions, they are ever present in aviation. Let's talk about some night illusions you could experience. Starting with the false visual horizon illusion, which generally happens on clear nights when what you're looking at makes you think the horizon is somewhere it's not, causing you to incorrectly align the aircraft with this false horizon. A couple of instances that could cause you to visualize a false horizon are if there are a bunch of distant stationary lights at night making you think that they're stars or other aircraft, and if there are cloud layers or even the northern lights if you live somewhere cool like that. Stationary lights on the ground can also make you develop visual autokinesis. When you stare at a single light for too long on a dark night, it could make that light look like it's moving. And if you think it's moving, you could potentially lose control of your aircraft trying to align yourself to it. You're probably thinking, that's ridiculous. I would never do something like that. Well, let's go ahead and throw out that hazardous attitude of invulnerability. The Indian Journal of Aerospace Medicine did a study on autokinesis in pilots in 2020. And the results came to find that autokinesis was reported in 37% of U.S. Air Force pilots, and that on average, it takes around 20 seconds for autokinesis to occur. It was even concluded that there are a few ways to counteract autokinesis if you are to experience it, including stretching your arms and by breaking your gaze for 5 seconds. So think about those things when night flying and keep your scan moving. Another illusion you could feel is a somatographic illusion. It happens not just at night, but anytime you don't have a good visual reference to the horizon, which of course is common at night. This illusion could happen in a rapid deceleration, making you feel as if the nose of the aircraft is dropping, which of course causes you to want to pitch up when you shouldn't. But it could also occur in a rapid acceleration, like on takeoff. In this instance, you may feel like your nose is pitching up more than it actually is, causing you to make the wrong correction and pushing the nose down. This actually happened to me once when I was taking off from an airport at night in the middle of nowhere with no other lights around. I felt like I was pitching up way more than I actually was, but I trusted my instruments and maintained a normal pitch attitude for the takeoff. And that's really what you have to do in these instances, is trust your instruments. Another illusion is flicker vertigo, which is caused by flickering lights inside or outside the flight deck. If the flickering is consistent, it could cause unconsciousness, nausea, dizziness, grogginess, headaches, or confusion. So maybe if you're flying at night in the clouds, turn off those strobes to try and prevent this. I bet you can guess when this next illusion could happen, the black hole approach, which is the featureless terrain illusion. You could experience this anytime you're going to land over water or non-lighted terrain where runway lights are the only source of light. Be aware of this when landing at remote areas of night. Trust your instruments, remember how to control the airport lighting, and use any approach slope indicators when they're available, like PAPIs or VASIs. In scenarios like this, you don't have any peripheral cues, so the runway could seem like it's downsloping or upsloping, which could cause you to land short of the runway. And if there's a city in the distance on higher terrain, it might cause you to fly your approach lower than normally. The opposite can happen if you're coming into land and the runway lights are too bright. That will make you think that you're flying too low when you're not. So your reaction, of course, will be to fly a higher approach. This is also considered another type of illusion called the ground lighting illusion. And this is the last illusion we have to discuss today. This ground lighting illusion can also happen to pilots flying at night in populated areas where there are lots of lights all over the ground. Straight lighted roads and lighted trains can easily be mistaken for approach and runway lights. The first step to combating all of these illusions is just knowing about them. So y'all are off to a great start. Now, when it comes to doing your pre-flight preparation for a night flight, be sure to study your departure and arrival airport and be mindful of airport lighting. Remember how the PAPIs and VASIs work that I mentioned earlier. Know what you should be seeing in regards to airport beacons. You want to be looking for a flashing white and green beacon if you're landing at a civilian land airport. A flashing white and yellow beacon is for a water airport. A flashing white, yellow, and green beacon is for a heliport. And a beacon with two quick white flashes alternating with the green flash identifies a military airport. Knowing if your destination runway has approach lights and what they look like couldn't hurt either. While this is really for instrument-rated pilots, it certainly wouldn't hurt for you private pilots out there to know this as well, especially if it could help you identify the correct runway. Lastly, be sure you know the colors and the locations of the taxiway lights and runway lights. Night flying is fun and relaxing and generally a little bit more peaceful than daytime flying, as the comms are quieter and the air is generally more calm. But don't ever let the excitement of night flying cloud your responsibilities of being a pilot. Always remember these 6 things. 1, during the day, wear sunglasses to protect your eyes and lessen the time your eyes need for dark adaptation. But be sure to take those sunglasses off after sunset, because that will impair your night vision, obviously, right? I included a link in the show notes for the best sunglasses for pilots to get, so go check that out. 2, do proper pre-flight planning to know your airport lighting and NOTAMs, looking for obstacle lighting and inoperative airport lighting. 3, your eye's ability to continue to be awesome is based off of your physical condition. Fatigue, colds, alcohol, stimulants, smoking, and medication can seriously impair your vision. Not to mention a lack of vitamin A in your diet makes dark adaptation that much more difficult for your eyes. So don't skimp out on carrots, red bell peppers, and other foods that have lots of vitamin A for your eyes. 4, continue your scan outside your aircraft slower than you would during the day while forcing your eyes to look off center. 5, if you have the ability, use oxygen when flying above 5,000 feet at night as night vision deterioration can happen. And 6, give your eyes 30 minutes to adjust to night before starting your night flight. And don't forget your eye patch to help one of your eyes maintain dark adaptation. All right, well, that was a blast, guys. I hope you learned a lot. If you did, be sure to like, subscribe, follow, rate, and review my show. And don't forget to tell your friends because sharing is caring. Have a happy new year, guys. Make good choices and don't do anything that I wouldn't do. And I will see you next year in 2025. Let's make it an awesome year, shall we? We shall. Until next time, I will see you later, aviators.